Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. This hour, we celebrate City Vision's 20th anniversary on the air. Our program first aired here on KALW on December 16th, 1991, and now some 20 years to the day. We welcome our creator, Rose Levinson. She started the show in 1991, and she hosted it for 17 of our 20 years here on the air. And it's great to welcome you back to our program tonight to spend the hour talking about City Visions, public radio, and your life beyond KLW. And for those of us who know Rose both on the air and off the air, it's not surprising that she's been quite busy in the last few years. Since leaving the program in 2008, she completed a PhD in cultural studies and is currently an adjunct professor in the Jewish Studies and Social Justice Program in the Department of Theology at the University of San Francisco. And she also I'm so excited to have you here, Rose. She also has an upcoming book entitled Death of a Holy Land, Report from Israeli Fiction, which I hope we'll hear more about this evening. So it is truly an honor and a thrill for me to welcome Rose Levinson back to City Visions.
Thank you, Joseph. It's wonderful to be here and odd to be sitting on this side of the microphone, but thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And as always, we'll invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134 in about 20 minutes or so. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us now at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So now that I've gotten over my jitters of having you on the other side.
Nice to get respect.
Of the table. Here, what's it like to be here back in the studio?
It's actually odd. It's odd to be on this side of the microphone. It's also very gratifying. The fact that the show is going after 20 years, that you and Lauren and all the people who work on the show, like Lisa, tonight's producer, Bob Summers, who I remember from back in the day, it's just it's gratifying. And when I left, when I thought about leaving, I thought, oh, it won't matter to me what happens. But it matters a lot that it's continued. It's a real sense of continuity, and I'm grateful and happy. So thanks.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit more about how you came up with the idea for this program. You created it back in 1991. What were you thinking at the time?
Well, I was very drawn to radio, and I was trying to find a place in radio in the Bay Area. And as everyone knows who's out there trying to find a place, it's a competitive. No matter what you're trying to do. But I, after about the third or fourth interview, by luck and chance, I talked to the manager of KLW, who hired me to do five-minute programs about local people. That was kind of interesting. But from the minute I got here, I proposed my own program. And you have to, women out there, hello. You have to be aggressive, and if you're a man too, but I mean, I just never let up. I said, I really want my own show, and I would like it to be kind of a little bit longer than 5 minutes. And finally, after about 3 or 4 months, it happened. City Vision started out as a half hour, but in about 2 or 3 months, it went to an hour. It was always call in. The name was what are we going to call it? Tried this, tried that. And I don't remember how we got to City Visions, but it's sort of become its moniker. Mm. So it was luck, accident, and persistence.
Mm. And so at that time, do you remember what you thought of as kind of when you looked forward, what you expected of the show, like how long you expected it to be on the air, that kind of thing, how you expected it to go? Was it like a, let's try and see how it goes for a few months?
It was so exciting, Joseph. I mean, there's something about, I don't know if you, as a host, I loved being on radio. There's something that I felt, I can't believe this is happening. Well, was it a Woody Allen movie, some movie where the kids are underneath? I think it was a Woody Allen film. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm not following you yet, but
It has to do with the radio and the magic of radio and listening to radio. And I think I'm of that generation because, P.S., I think things are shifting now and that radio delivery is going to change because of the web. Mm. And I'm fine with that. But generationally, the radio is very magical to me. Mm. So having my own show, my own place in San Francisco, the second or third largest media market, I mean, it's a pretty it was heady, and it stayed that way for years and years and years. So I never thought about leaving until it was time to leave.
And so let's stay a little bit with the history of the program. You mentioned that the format of the show changed from half an hour, well, 5 minutes, it sounds like, to then half an hour to then an hour. What other changes did you go through over the course of the 17 or so years that you were with the program?
I started out doing it all by myself, meaning setting up the show, producing it, finding the guests, writing the copy, and then delivering the show. And that lasted for about a year and a half, almost 2 years. And then John Cavell came on as assistant producer. And John is now living in D.C., and we're still in touch. We're still good friends. And he was instrumental in taking City Visions to the next step, which was building a production team. And I over the years, about 30 to 35 people worked as producers on City Visions. Many of them went on to get master's degrees in journalism. Matthew Caravillo, who's working now for the SF Chronicle, he was a producer. Vicki McClure was John and my first producer. She got a journalism MA from Berkeley and is working in the newspaper business, which is on for another 10 minutes, I understand. So, you know, I mean, it's people went on, and it was a terrific training ground, I think.
Mm. And according to Lisa, our producer, it sounds like that movie was Radio Days.
Thank you, Lisa. Radio Days. That was it.
Starring Woody Allen, Mia Farrow, and Diane Wiest.
Okay, good.
For those of you who are wondering. So you said that you brought in a production team. And so what was that like for you to go from something that you were doing for a whole year and a half on your own, and then you bringing in others' voices, others' perspectives, having to kind of basically work in a team?
It was great. It was great. I mean, one of the things about doing a weekly show, as you know, Joseph, all too well, the details. First detail, who's going to be on? Will that person be a good... I used to tell the producers, it's like a dinner party. Try to think who would be a good counterbalancing voice. We'd have 2 to 3 guests. I was thrilled. And I've always liked being in a mentoring role. I've always enjoyed it. And a lot of what I liked about the production team was working with a group of people, most of them starting out, and bringing them into something that gave them a chance to develop skills. So I really like that role. And, you know.
Yeah. And so as you built the team over time, what did you see as the place that this program held, not only within this station, but perhaps on the radio dial, when we think of the breadth of perspectives that you can have on a talk show like this one? Did you come with a particular idea in mind about an ideology or a perspective or something? I mean,
nice.
Perhaps an agenda
that
you were hoping for.
Nice question, Joseph. I think in terms of the kind of one of the things that we meaning the management at that time, those of us who were involved, was that City Visions would have not a national vision. Like, I'm a big admirer of Your Call. I think it's an amazing show. And I think one of its strengths, Rose Aguilar, I love that her name is also Rose, it's fantastic on national, international, and local as well. City Vision's goal was to reflect local, meaning San Francisco Bay Area, and statewide issues, and try not to stray too far off of that agenda. Sometimes that felt a little restrictive to me, but it was partly trying to fit in with other programming goals that we tried to stick with a local agenda. And I think that's a very important piece of it. So City Visions, mm-hmm. rather than national or international. And we were trying to reflect the complexity of issues that is in the Bay Area, in particular, and in the state of California, if you will, in general. Mm. And there's never any dearth of things to talk about.
Mm. And do you feel like you were trying to have a particular type of approach to the topics that you picked over the years in terms of, you know, I mean, obviously there's a breadth of political perspectives that you could bring to the air. How did you balance perhaps your personal politics with what you decided were the boundaries of what was on the air?
Nice question. I am left of center, and as the years have gone by, that position to me is more and more thought out, if you will. So I remember having the head of the Republican Party in San Francisco on the air, and he was delighted. I can't remember his name, but it was like, well, you know, you're the lone Republican in San Francisco, so let's see what you have to say. I did strive to be fair. I don't think it's my style, even though it's a pretty strong style, was not the kind of thing where I felt you have to agree with me on air. You have to be left of center, and I wouldn't try to tilt it that way. But one of the things that we strove for in terms of our mix-up of guests was conflicting points of view. As I say to the producers, if you do a show on gun control, that's so easy. You got for and against. Easy show to do, easy to represent it. It was when you had less clear-cut yes and no, black and white, trying to reflect a range of opinion, that it took some creativity on the part of the production team. So I tried to honor the fact that all discussion, all ideas have a wide range, even though mine is left of center, how do I reflect the range?
And did you talk about it much on the air? Did you reveal your politics on the air much?
Looking back on it, I don't think I did, but others might disagree. I think I mentioned to him, we were discussing tonight's program, I stayed away from doing programs on what's going on in Israel-Palestine. And the reason for that is twofold. One, I'm a Jew. I'm a self-identified Jew. And I'm very left of center on the issue of the Middle East. And I just didn't want to put myself in a position where something that was very of great personal importance to me, and in which it would be hard for me to be fair. And it's such a volatile issue. I mean, it's, I don't know if we'll get any calls on it tonight, but it's still a volatile, it continues to be a volatile issue. And I stayed away from that. It was one of the few things that I tended not to do very many shows on, because I felt that I could not be even remotely objective. And I think objectivity is an overpraised virtue. I think almost everything is subjective. But I would stay away from that topic.
Mm. Others?
Not really. I think there were times certainly when it would, again, stylistically, I have the kind of personality where my opinion would leak out. One of the things I remember was the recall of Gray Davis, Governor Gray Davis, which I thought was insane. And not because I was a big Davis supporter, but we elected the guy. He had, I can't remember how much more time until he was going to be finished. And a lot of that energy came from people who wanted Schwarzenegger in. And I remember being outraged at what I saw as a very skewed process. So I think certainly when things would come up about which I felt, you know, what's going on here, it probably tended to come across. Mm. And I think it's both a strength and a downside.
Mm. And what kinds of shows did you really like to host?
Oh, boy. Interesting. I like to do things on the arts. I like to do things on the propositions. Again, these were relatively easy to get a spectrum. I did not like shows that had politicians on them. Politicians, in my experience, were the worst guests. No matter what you ask them, they would answer out of what they were trying to promote. So you'd say, well, what do you think about blah? Say, gee, I'm glad you asked me about, you know, Zed. And then they would go on. And pulling them back to answer directly was almost impossible. So I can say, yes, that I didn't tend to like, and that was politicians of all stripes, didn't matter. Artists were always good. I liked, it wasn't so much a topic. I liked people who were articulate and clear about what they were doing, and could say with intelligence what it was that they were about. The worst guests, of course, were people who were not articulate, in which I would look at the clock and think, feels like about midnight, and we have like 45 minutes left to go. So not a good feeling.
So in case you're just joining us, this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're celebrating our 20th anniversary on the air with City Vision's creator and founding host, Rose Levinson. She's adjunct professor in the Jewish Studies and Social Justice Program in the Department of Theology at the University of San Francisco. And her upcoming book, which I hope to get to more in a moment about, is Death of a Holy Land, Report from Israeli Fiction. We're going to open our phone lines to our listeners to call in with questions and comments. 415-841-4134 is the number to dial. Again, 415-841-4134, or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So Rose, how did you deal when you had like a knot in your throat like I seem to have tonight?
How did you deal with that? No doubt, being in the presence of the founding creator. I know I've just thrown you for a loop. Just calm down. I was thinking when you were given the phone number, another thing that I would go through as host is, all right, how many times am I going to give the phone number? Mm. At what point does it sound desperate? Because some shows simply did not generate many phone calls. And so I would say, okay, I'll give it up. Mm. You know, and there's a sort of rhythm to it. So you don't want to sound desperate. Okay, so don't call. All right, so fine. You know, I don't need to hear from you. So you never call. And then, you know, so there was always that sort of thin line between, well, I'll just have to get through this. And some shows would bring in a lot of calls. Here's a show that brought in millions of calls. Should dogs be allowed to walk in certain parts of San Francisco? You know, the dog question. Do any program on pets, the lines would light up. Oh, man, my dog's this. I'm a dog lover, so I got it. But it was really fun. Things that you think, well, wait, what? And people are passionate about certain issues, and other things, they can kind of take it or leave it. So what would I do about a frog in my throat?
Yeah.
Oh, I just look at the guest and just ask them to keep going.
Yeah.
Signal them to continue speaking.
Like I am right
like
now.
Like you are right now. Yes, that's right. And the number is 415-841-4134.
And feedback at cityvisionsradio.com. Let's talk a little bit about the craft of doing this. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned it along the way already. But what do you think were some things that you developed over time as you hosted the show for years? What were some things that you noticed in yourself changing about the way you handled hosting or doing other things?
One of the things that I really like about hosting, as opposed to being the guest as I am now, the rhythm of the program is very much in your hands. And a lot of times I would think, if I were thinking, was that a good show or was it mediocre or was it no good, had to do with the rhythm. If I felt that I had managed the questioning well, I had engaged the guests, I had gotten enough back and forth, and I knew when to come in and when to stay out. Mm. I do think the rhythm and the time, it's craft. I think doing any kind of art, now I do writing mainly, writing and teaching. Then I was doing City Visions. And a lot of it is the craft. How do you craft the hour so that whoever's listening or not feels like they got an agreeable, rhythmically interesting program. Does that make sense? That mm-hmm. rhythm notion, Jeff? So I don't know if you...
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't so much... Sometimes I'd feel I was on it. That was great. Sometimes, no, I was not on it. But mostly I was there. I mean, you can't sort of get too distracted. Mm. I left hosting because I was no longer fully present. I felt like I'd discussed these issues, not over and over again, but things just recur. And at a certain point, I felt like I'm not bringing anything fresh to this conversation. It's time to go. It was a long leave taking. I didn't just walk out the door. But I, at a certain point, if you're not being creative, if you're not listening, you're phoning it in, you should leave. Hmm. And I would say that, I mean, if you have the leisure to do that, depending on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting point. And it's amazing to have that kind of self-assessment to be able to do that, and I think I agree with you. Every week, it feels that way. It's like, how am I doing? How's this going? And it's, you never know how it's going to go until you're in it, which is something I've often told producers. You know, you can craft a great panel, but you've never done a dry run of having all those people in the same room with the mic on, and you don't know how it's all going to go, and that's.
And some people are very good on air. They're relaxed. They're attentive. Some people will dry up. I remember doing shows that, and I was thought, this is remarkable to me. You know, very bright person, and they get in the studio and they just can't do it, or they're nervous, and so they begin to shy off. So we kind of you never could know. And then the other thing that's challenging, and you know this as well, Joseph, is doing phone interviewing, where the person can't get to the studio and you're trying to keep things going without being able to see them and read their face. But that gets easier. I found that was something that got easier, actually.
Yeah, and this is more your reminiscence than mine, but I remember the first show I hosted, I think all three guests were on the phone.
Yeah.
And we were having phone problems that night.
But, it's always that, little technical glitches, yes.
So anyway, just to reintroduce the program, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at kalw.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're celebrating our 20th anniversary with our creator and founding host, Rose Levinson. 415-841-4134 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation, or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com.
You know, one thing I want to say, when you give the station ID, I think KLW is an amazing, wonderful place. And I still feel enormous loyalty to it, as I think it's the best station in the Bay Area for what it does. I think that its creativity over the years, it just keeps developing. The news department is new since I was here, which is amazing. The local shows, Your Call, has gotten stronger and stronger and stronger. I think City Visions is just an incredibly creative, amazing place that just works on a very lean budget and delivers amazing creative radio.
Well, thank you for that. And of course, you had a lot to do with that.
Well,
So, going back to memories over the last 20 years or so, can you think of a particularly funny moment that perhaps people on the other end of the radio didn't realize was kind of unfolding? And there was some sort of moment where you were trying to keep things from totally crashing and
keeping things from totally crashing. That would happen when we had some technical problems. You have to pretend that everything's fine. Early on, I remember when a guest didn't show up. They called, went on the air, they called 15 minutes before. I don't think I can make it. I said, you don't think you can make it. Well, would you like to take a side one way or the other? They were like, oh yeah, I'm in San Mateo and I don't, what the, you know, and it's like, well, that was kind of a mess. And I forget how we got through it. I forget how we did it, but, then the reason you have more than one guest because you don't know. So technical glitches and the need to just kind of pretend that all's well was one thing that would happen. Again, disappointing guests were something that would have to be dealt with the best way you could when it just wasn't working. I mean, they would clam up or they were inarticulate or off the point. There were no, interesting enough, in 20 years, there were no major disasters, which is actually quite astonishing when you think about it. But also you learn how to handle it. I mean, you just pretend that everything's fine and it kind of comes together. I don't really remember anything. Nothing sticks in my mind as being disastrous over that time period.
Well, that sounds great. I hope that that remains the case for this program moving forward. I also don't recall anything that seemed particularly disastrous. Although it's interesting, I always have a different opinion about how a show went. The producer will say, oh, wow, that was really great. You sounded really on tonight. And I'll think sometimes that I'm sort of off in some cloud somewhere and never quite got my hands around the topic. And so it's always interesting to have your perspective versus the listener's perspective.
Right. It's also, radio is a very intimate medium. Mm. I think that, people are listening in their cars, stuck in traffic. People are cooking or working. And there's this way in which the voice on the radio is an almost primitive, you're sitting by the fireside and this voice is reaching you. And I think that still holds, even with all the ways that people connect now, mostly online. But there's something very magic about that voice coming in to your space, wherever that space happens to be. And I always took that. I always felt that was part of the magic of what I got to do, was to be that voice.
Mm. And over the time that you were with the program, how do you feel that public radio changed? Or since the time you've left, how do you feel that public radio has developed?
Well, I think what's happened, and I don't think it's any, you know, secret, is that the craziness of the dialogue, mostly because of talk radio, and it's, in a sense, you could say that a show like City Visions is talk radio, on the left of the spectrum, if you will. But I think public radio struggles in terms of resources to keep up with voices that come out of what let's call the right wing sphere, like Fox. You know, or was that guy Rush Limbaugh? He's a guy on air, and Bill Riley's on TV. Tremendous power, tremendous finance, and also right wing radio, talk radio. So the voices on a place like KLW are so crucial, and I think that, I mean, I follow. What do I listen to? I listen to KLW, you know, and NPR. NPR, I think, is a terrific resource, but it's a corporation. And I think that KLW's strength is to not just take what it gets from NPR, but to supplement that with really imaginative and hard-hitting local stuff. Not just local. Mm-hmm. But so I think public radio, and you know the money is always an issue, Joseph. I mean, for listener-supported, I think that KLW just does a brilliant job, and I think it will keep on. But it's in the wind. It's a crazy time in the country with very bitter, bitter, bitter discourse between left and right. I don't remember the split being this bitter, ever. And I just feel like it's very difficult for people on the left like me to talk to others on the right. We all just hurl words at one another without listening. And I think that the voices that you hear on this station are crucial in not letting a right-wing tide just sweep everything along.
Mm-hmm. Other ways in which you felt like the conversation changed over the years?
Just more bitter. I think more polar. I think that I try to think why. Why has the conversation gotten so polarized? I do think right-wing radio and television and media has an enormous impact. I think that the irony is that we have the first African-American president, mixed-race president, actually, who's turned out, in many of our opinion, including mine, to be much more conservative instinctually than I think I thought he was going to be. All of a sudden, it just seems this tsunami of voices on the right where things that we thought were settled, like gun control. No, it's worse than it's worse than it's ever been. Or immigration rights right now. It just feels like those things that those of us on the left thought were somewhat pushed back seem to be coming back with renewed ferocity. Mm-hmm. And that the voices of the left pushing against it in things like Occupy Wall Street, and it's not that the left has given up, but it's a long, 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 long road, and the question of tactics is a major issue.
So given that landscape, then, what do you think the role of a program like this one or a station like this one is in this discourse?
I think the role of a station like this, is to continue to support those perspectives that are left of center. Now, those are cartoon words: left of center, right of center. So I like the word progressive, meaning, in the way I would define it, pushing against the conventional wisdom. I think KLW's programming pushes against conventional wisdom. You don't want to just be talking to yourself. And so the question becomes, okay, how do you reach out to people for whom a more right-wing perspective is their comfort level? You just keep doing what you can do with as much passion as you can do it and hope that you bring people along. I think it's hard, Joseph. I think the changing minds, University of San Francisco, which is where I teach and which is a wonderful liberal Jesuit university, its motto is changing the world one mind at a time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a terrific way to go at it. You change the world one mind at a time. Voices that are on KLW, mm-hmm. which tend to be on what I think is the side of the progressive side. Mm-hmm. Now, if a right winger is going to say, no, you guys are crazy, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, we all know what they're going to say. But you don't, doesn't mean to stop saying it.
Because often the critique or the way that people understand this polarization that you talk about is that people have circumscribed themselves within communities, geographical communities, or communities of discourse that sort of echo their sentiments and their value system, and that there's very little that bridges those types of communities, and so the conversation just kind of gets reinforced in these polar pools, so to speak. So how do you break free of that?
I think that's a great question, and I think that's a great just kind of meta question. I think one of the ironies is, as connected as we all are online, which I think is an amazing and actually a wondrous thing. I think it's wondrous. I love it. I'm not very technically adept, as my dear husband David keeps telling me. He's an engineer and extremely helpful. But I think that the internet, the web, it's amazing how it connects us. And in an ironic way, pushes us into very small pools, Joseph. So that what could be a larger conversation, often we tend to, like goes to like, instead of crossing it. Maybe that's just an inevitable part of long-term transition.
And do you think the Bay Area is particularly guilty of that kind of a polarization?
I don't think particularly guilty. I think we in the Bay Area tend sometimes to have a certain arrogance about our politics or whatever it is we have opinions about. It tends as an area, I think, to be left of center, which is what makes it so appealing. I think sometimes that can become self-enclosing and self-righteous. I don't think it's particularly bad here. I think we push often against the tide. That's look beyond borders, and boy, it's like, eeks, they're coming from Idaho.
Yeah. And one of the challenges, I think, that the producers and I, and I'm sure this is something you've had experience with, and I'd like to hear more about it, in developing shows that try to bring in multiple perspectives, including right and left, is that how do you balance needing to do that because you think it will help move a conversation forward, it'll help open up understanding, without giving airtime to a very radicalized or very kind of fringe or small voice that sort of, if given the right proportion of airtime, could mean it could almost fill a space larger than perhaps it requires.
I think that people are coming more and more to the stand that you, for example, on the issue of climate change. You're not going to have a climate denier on. In other words, just because they say there's another side to it, I think one has the right and, in fact, the responsibility to say, no, that's bogus information and you're promoting a bogus position. Not making that call, you can say, well, you know, is there some doubt about climate change? Is there some realistic voices that are really challenging what has become, it seems to me, we are in a climate crisis. So if I were hosting the show, I'd say, no, we're not going to have airtime given to a climate denier. Now, we could maybe argue about specifics. I mean, that is, for example, is geoengineering a good idea? This whole notion that we can, even though we need to take a long-range view, there might be things we could do right now that would be a Band-Aid on a very, very complex problem. Okay, we can maybe, quote, argue that. But I don't think people who are on what I would... I don't think we have a responsibility to present every side, because some sides are, I believe, flat-out wrong, and they're promoting perspectives that are just not good.
Or counterproductive.
Counterproductive, yeah.
Yeah. And this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco. And on the web at KALW.org, I'm Joseph Pache. And tonight we're celebrating our 20th anniversary on the air with City Visions creator and founding host, Rose Levinson. She's currently adjunct professor in the Jewish Studies and Social Justice Program in the Department of Theology at the University of San Francisco. And her upcoming book is Death of a Holy Land, Report from Israeli Fiction. And We invite you to call in with your questions, comments, or birthday wishes, perhaps. The number to dial to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So we have a couple of calls coming in. Before we go there, though, is there one other thing that you would say was a big influence on this program and how it developed? You mentioned the internet and how that's affected the way we communicate. Any other things that you can think of?
Not really, Joseph. I mean, I think the internet, if you will, is a technical, like it's great now that you can get KLW online because the signal strength, and that has to do with just structural things that can't be shifted. That had no impact on what we did. The way the shows got shaped were very much dependent on producer interest. And I would work with them, but pretty much say, look, if you're interested in this, let's do it. Let's go with it. I don't think, looking back on 20 years, I was thinking, have things changed politically? Have things, you know, what's the shift been? The shift has been, as I say, a more bitter discourse, I think, and that's an unfortunate shift. A lot of those issues, they're just proverbial. They just come back and back and get recycled. And that's, there's progress and then there's fallback. So that French saying, plus ça change, plus la même chose. The more things change, the more they remain the same. And I say that partly out of my gray hairs. You know, there's a rhythm to world affairs, and shows like this reflect it.
415-841-4134, or email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. And we have John Cavell joining us. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, you know, this is our John. Hi,
yes.
John. John was the first producer of City Visions, and then became executive producer, and then just made the show go forward. How you doing, John?
I'm doing great, Rose. I hope you are, too.
Yep. Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's kind of late here on the East Coast, but I was happy to tune in, albeit over the Internet, of course. So I'm probably just catching up with you now. I'm hearing you live over the phone.
Do you have a particular memory about your time with City Visions that you wanted to share, John?
Well, I've got lots of memories. They started in summer of 93 when the station was still over in the basketball courts on Harrison Street.
Forgot that, yeah.
And I guess it was a year or so later that the studios were moved down to Mansell Avenue, where I believe they still are today.
That is correct.
Yeah, and I keep wondering, did we ever get a good hybrid phone system?
Our engineer is shaking his head no.
Ah, John. Remember, plus le change, etc.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I remember is that it was often surprisingly difficult to persuade people to come on as guests on the show. You'd think that you're offering them an audience of maybe tens of thousands of people in San Francisco and the environs, and they've got a cause, and surely they'd want to come right on. And yet I found myself having to really sell pretty hard sometimes to get people on, and I was always kind of perplexed by that. I eventually coined a term for it. I started calling it microphobia. They see a microphone and they just, you know, drop their cargo. It was, you know, it was no good.
Interesting. Well, John, I just want to say that, you know, I just remember so many of the, it's funny you bring up the basketball court where the studio used to be, but all those years that you produced it on your own too, was a long time. And then we started building it. Vicki McClure was our first producer.
Yeah, it was two or three years before we really started vigorously bringing people on as associate producers. But like you, I'm proud of all the people that we did. Mm-hmm. And when I look back at that roster and see how many of them went on to great things, you know, journalism school and all kinds of things, you know, it's something that I think we should take pride in. And I did want to mention something else, Rose, which is that my perception of you, maybe it's clearer because I'm not you, but I thought you were always very professional and nonpartisan on the air. Very rarely did your personal view interfere with your role as being the neutral arbiter as much as possible of the topics that were being discussed.
Nice to hear, John, because you don't know, and I feel like, okay, I'm coming out as left of center, woo-hoo. But it's nice to hear. I'm glad. I did try to be. I think fairness is you know, or trying to hear the different perspective. But thank you. That's nice to hear. I appreciate
it. Well, whenever we went out afterward for a coffee or a drink or something, that's when you'd really come out. But fortunately, the mic was by then.
Yeah, we were off the air.
We were. And the last thing I'd like to say, though, before you move on to somebody else with something interesting to say, is that leaving San Francisco a little over 10 years ago, as I did, and coming to supposedly, you know, the most vibrant place in the country, the nation's capital, which it is in some respects, I got to tell you that you don't have anything like the great radio scene in the D.C. area that you have in San Francisco. And KELW remains one of the beacons in San Francisco. Not the only one, but one of the brightest. And I wish we had something like that here in D.C.
Yay. Yay, Kat. Yeah, good.
Well, thanks so much, John, for your call.
Sure. Thank you for taking the call, and good luck, and carry on for the next 20 years.
Thanks a lot. Good night.
Good night.
So 415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com if you'd like to join our conversation. So, Rose, I wanted to shift our conversation towards the life that you've had since City Vision. So a PhD, how did you decide to do that?
It's something I always wanted, and I think that, and this is generational, when I was a girl, mom, you know, back in the day, if you aspired to that world, you aspired to marry a professor, to marry a PhD. You didn't aspire as a girl child to be one. And one of the most remarkable things that's happened in my lifetime has been feminism, and the opportunities that it opened up. The Bay Area also is a place where, as a woman, you are encouraged to do your own thing. So getting my doctorate in my 60s is partly due to living in an environment, not to mention having a mate, who encourages that. And I teach at University of San Francisco, and I teach young people. I teach undergraduates. And it's hard for them to imagine that there was a time when a woman did not have the opportunity to be a doctor, a PhD, or to be a lawyer or doctor. It's hard for them to, it's like, what? And I say, yeah. So it was something that I wanted, and getting a doctorate later in life is, I think, particularly nourishing. I'll put it that way. You have, hopefully, the maturity to think things through. You're less driven by career issues to make it as a young academic. And I think your ability to reflect on stuff is a lot more developed. So I was, I loved getting my doctorate, and it was a very meaningful way of bringing together all kinds of threads. In my case, threads around my Jewish identity, because I wrote my dissertation on, it was called The End of the Founding Zionist Dream, Reflections in Contemporary Fiction. And the book that is coming out is a rewrite of my dissertation. And essentially, it's a very, very critical look at Israel through the work of four of its novelists. Three women, they're all living now in Israel. Three women and one man. Yoram Kaniuk is the male writer. The women are Orly Castell-Bloom, Zeruya Shalev, and Michal Govrin. And none of them as well known as they ought to be, all available in English. And all of them, as in my view, brilliant artists. Their novels reflect a country that is very, very much in turmoil, and that we need to look at the reality of life there in order to begin, particularly as Jews, and speaking as a Jew. Israel has a lot of mythic elements to it. And until you put aside the mythos and start to look at the reality, you can't begin to suggest the changes that need to happen. It's a very tough to look at Israel with a critical eye. And it also tends to instantly burst into flame, both on left and right.
Some of this polarization we were talking about.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, yeah.
And how did you choose fiction and novelists to get at what the message you want to get out?
I'm one of these people that's really always loved literature and fiction and writing. And even though City Visions is public policy. And my dissertation and the work I'm doing now has to do with public policy. Literature is my passion. Art, literature, the written word, the spoken word. And so when I look at a place like Israel and I try to work through my own conflicts around what I see, the role of Israel, its policies, and so on, I don't want to read the historians, the social scientists, the sociologists, as much as I want to read the artists. And I think these are brilliant writers. And one of my hopes for the book is that it will introduce them to a wider American audience. They deserve to be more read than they are.
Speaking of the wider American audience, or perhaps a narrower view of the Bay Area audience, what is your perspective on the discourse on issues pertaining to Israel here in the Bay Area?
Oh, I think the Bay Area is one of the places where you get a tremendous amount of good energy going into bringing about real dialogue. There was an organization called Brit Zedek V'Shalom, which then merged with J Street. For those people who follow, and hopefully that's a lot of people listening, J Street is an Israel-oriented lobby that is for a two-state solution that's positioned itself in opposition to AIPAC, which is the very unquestioning, quote, right-wing, Israel can do whatever it needs to do, and we'll support it. That voice, whatever Israel needs to do, we will support, is still very loud in the Bay Area, as it is throughout the United States. And that's not just a Jewish voice. There are a lot of fundamentalist Christians who support unquestioningly Israeli policy. And there are a lot of Jews, let me speak to the fears that we Jews have, because of the Jewish history over the centuries. Jews have, it's almost hardwired in us, a fear of being destroyed as a culture. The most recent destruction being the Holocaust, the terrible Nazi, 6 million Jews dead. That doesn't go away quickly. And one of the things I write about in the book is the Holocaust as a negative theology. It continues to frighten Jews terribly, to drain energy. It's being used in Israel to justify a lot of what I consider wrongheaded policies. Never again, never again. So in the name of never again, Jews are doing terrible things to Palestinians. I want to lend my voice to those on the progressive side, organizations like J Street, like Rabbis for Human Rights, like New Israel Fund, like B'Tselem. There are many, many organizations out there, Peace Now, Americans for Peace Now, and within Israel, many, many, many voices challenging Israel's path. What you run into when you're left of center, as I am, is the accusation of being self-hating. That, you know, how can you criticize Israel? You're giving grist to Jew haters, to anti-Semites. What are you doing? And I understand that. I understand where that fear comes from. But at a certain point, you have to say, no, I cannot support the occupation of land that I consider not belonging to those people with whom I identify, the Jewish people. And by the way, American Jews and Israelis, we are not the same people. We have similar interests, but Israel is a different culture. It's a modern nation state. It has its own culture, its own ways of doing things, and I don't like the conflation that often happens.
I'm curious what it's like for you to talk about this here on the air. When we talked earlier in our program tonight about how you kind of avoided going there years that you hosted.
Right. Now it's fine because tonight I'm a guest. I'm a guest in your house, Joseph, if you will. I'm here at your invitation. I no longer am responsible for fairness on air, if you will. The way I teach, by the way, is I am very clear with my undergraduate, with my kids, for whom I have enormous respect. I don't think you should teach if you don't respect those you're teaching. But I'd say, look, you are listening to my voice is left of center. Understand that. I have biases. I have subjectivity. Question authority. This is what we said back in the day in the 60s. And so I encourage my students to question me. and I try to bring in other voices into my classroom. I've had kids in my class who are very unquestioningly pro-Israel, pro-Israeli policies. I said, great, great, write a paper on that. You don't have to at all get to where I am. Just be aware of other sides. I think one of the things you have to do is to just be honest about where you're coming from. So it doesn't feel at all, it feels comfortable, because part of what we say has to do with our position.
Hmm. And so in the vein of trying to expand the conversation, how would you imagine a conversation that were able to bridge the gap between the sides on the Israeli-Palestinian issue or other issues that you touched upon in your comments just now? How do you see that conversation coming about? Do you see hope for that kind of a discourse emerging?
I think it's very slowly emerging. I think that people who do well at political work, and I am not one of them, that's why I write, because you have to take a long view. You have to be patient. So the people I know who are doing good work in changing the dialogue, there's a program that is sponsored by the program that I'm part of. It's called Abraham's Vision. It brings together young Israelis and young Palestinians to talk about what it's like to be a Palestinian, what it's like to be an Israeli, or to be a Jew. And people, the kids have their lives changed by this. There are many Israeli and Palestinian and Jewish voices speaking across the divide. In an ironic way, the divide sometimes in a place like the Bay Area is more intense than it can be in a neighborhood in parts of Israel. People will come together there and find common cause. But like in all politics, it's the louder voices that dominate. I think it's changing, Joseph. I think it's slow. And P.S., I think that the unquestioning support of Israel is changing, and that is scaring. It's scaring a lot of Jews, because the fear is that if Israel is critiqued honestly, that it will lose important support and, God forbid, it'll be destroyed. So you see, I'm trying to acknowledge there's a lot of fear, and it's not all unjustified.
Mm-hmm. And if you could encapsulate kind of what's the premise of your book, what's the thrust?
The basic thrust is Israel is not a holy land. It is not. It is a modern nation state. It needs to be looked upon as a nation state to take out the kind of overladen, overheated rhetoric that applies to the word holy, whether you're Christian, Jewish, or Muslim, Abrahamic religions, the three so-called Abrahamic religions. Let me stress again, it is not the Jews, and it is not a Jewish lobby that unquestioningly supports Israel. It's a mix of people, and you have to. That's an important thing to keep in mind.
Okay, as we have just a few minutes left on the program, let's go to our caller, David from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. I do appreciate you giving me a chance to speak, and I'd like to congratulate you on 20 years on the air. That's a big thing for anybody to achieve. But as a former Democrat, now Republican, whose position has changed because I've read more widely and more extensively, and I happen to be a gay man and very progressive in my views on things, I would really urge you to take a more serious point of view of diversity of opinion in your programming. I find your programming generally tilts not center-left, far left. You tilt much further left than, say, KQED. You don't tilt as far left as KPFA, but you're in between the two, as far as I could tell. And I think that does a disservice, because exactly what Rose said, there's a bubble chamber here, an echo chamber in the Bay Area. Most people only listen to their own friends, and they only hear preconceived notions and opinions and data. So I would urge you, as an educational radio station, to please broaden the discourse, bring in fair-minded, data-driven folks who don't see it your way.
And do you have any other questions or comments for Rose?
Just congratulations, long life, success, health, and happiness. I don't agree.
Thank
with
you very much, Dave. Even though you're Republican, I'll accept that.
You were saying, David. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, wish her long life, health, happiness, prosperity. I hope it's all a good year for all of you. I don't agree with her on a lot of political issues, but I wish her well.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, very much, for David, for your well wishes and for your comments. We do take our callers' perspectives very seriously. Thanks so much. So we have a few minutes left, Rose. And in closing here, I'm curious, in the 55 minutes or so that you've been behind that microphone, are you missing radio?
No, not really. I mean, it's wonderful to be on the air. I mean, there's what I always like about it, too, is the theatricality. It's fun to kind of perform. I'm performing as a radio person. I miss it occasionally, but no. I've moved my energy into writing, and I'm trying to think things through. For example, all the stuff I was saying earlier about Israel and being a Jew, Jewish identity, the book, teaching. It's a different kind of use of energy than doing the show each week. But it was nice to be in the studio again. Nice to. It's just. It was many happy years, and I am so delighted again that City Visions is still on. I also think Matt Martin's doing a fantastic job as manager, and that you and Lauren are doing a fantastic job as on-air hosts.
I'm sorry, just begging the question here. Would you ever come back to host a show on the Israeli discourse that we're talking about?
Yes, I would do it, and it would be interesting. Yes, and then I would switch hats. Because if I were hosting it, yeah. I would try to do it with much less forcefulness and much less revelation than I've indulged in this evening.
Well, because it's interesting to sort of come back to something that means so much to you, and then find a way to bring it to the listeners from the host's perspective. So what's next for you?
Well, the book is next, and promoting it and talking about it. Publishing a book is only the first step. My work at University of San Francisco and as someone involved with Abraham's Vision and hoping to help promote that. And I love USF, and I love the chance to be able to work the stuff that I'm passionate about. It's a real gift, and I'm grateful. And thank you very much for inviting me. It's really been nice to be here.
Well, it's been great to have you. And just one last thing, any for people out there who are interested in radio or interested in doing something like this, any words of advice for them?
Just call KLW and see about interning.
Did you clear that with that before you?
No, I mean it's wonderful. By the way, but the face of it's all changing. Check out new media stuff and learn how to use the web, the tubes on the web. The internet is going to become more and more force in this.
Well, I want to thank you, Rose, for spending time with us tonight to help us mark our 20th anniversary. It's been really great speaking with you, and it's been great sharing this evening with all our listeners out there as well. So that was Rose Levinson, City Visions creator and founding host, adjunct professor at the University of San Francisco, and author of the upcoming book, Death of a Holy Land, Report from Israeli Fiction. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, check out our website at cityvisionsradio.com. Our engineer this evening was Bob Summer. I produced tonight's show with the help from Lisa Denenmark. City Vision's senior producer is Judith Sansone, and Neil Freese manages our website. We'll be off for a couple of weeks to celebrate the holidays. I'll be back again live on Monday, January 9th, when we talk about public school choice. This is Joseph Pache. For my co-host Lauren Meltzer and all of us at City Visions, thanks for being a part of us for the first 20 years. Happy holidays, and here's to 20 more. Good night.